Hi, it's Darren Helwedge here. You know, we've recently restarted Thinking Out Loud after the program was on hiatus for a while. It actually started more than 15 years ago. And we are going to, here on the website, kbia.org, and on our podcast, which you can also find at kbia.org and subscribe through most of the, people that do podcasts. We're going to start digging into the archives. I'm not exaggerating when I tell you there are hundreds and hundreds and hundreds of shows that we've done over the 15 years or so of Thinking Out Loud, including some interesting sports conversations and arts and a lot of Mizzou stuff, obviously. Some of it's very dated and not going to be that interesting. You know, I could offer up a preview of an Errol Rock Lyceum Theater season from 15 years ago, but that's probably not going to be of much interest to you. But we are going to bring back some classic programs that I think are what we in the business call evergreen. They are programs that are always going to be of interest. On this coming Tuesday night's show, I've got a really fun conversation with Wilbur Lynn, who is the new music director of the Missouri Symphony. He's only the third in the symphony's history. He replaces Kirk Trevor, who recently stepped aside after a pretty good long run here in Columbia with the symphony. And before him was, of course, the founder of the symphony, the guy who saved the Missouri Theater, and a gentleman that I have undying respect for and miss very much, as does everybody who loves great music here in our community, Hugo Vianello. I mentioned to Wilbur that I had this conversation with Hugo somewhere in the archives, and I spent, frankly, a couple of hours digging around trying to find it. I'm not the most organized person in the world, but I did it. I found this program. It's from our Thinking Out Loud arts program that we used to do, and I think it's going to be an interesting thing for you to hear as we get ready to welcome a new music director and the Firefly series that's coming this summer from the Missouri Symphony with Wilbur Lynn. We're going to go back into the archives and hear the guy who started it all. Here's a conversation from about 15 years or so ago with Hugo Vianello. Hope you enjoy it. Good evening and welcome to Thinking Out Loud Arts on Monday. Few people have contributed more to the art scene in our community than Hugo Vianello. He founded our chamber orchestra and has been instrumental, pardon the pun, in rescuing the Missouri Theater, and of course has done so much more for the arts community as well. Tonight we meet the maestro in a personal interview.
Well, Dad, when he found out he had a son, Dad, who was a violinist, and really quite a good one, he came to the little crib and put a piece of music on the crib, hoping that someday I would wind up being a musician.
Hugo Vianello, the guest, Thinking Out Loud, Arts on Monday from KBIA. Hi, and welcome to Thinking Out Loud, Arts on Monday from KBIA. I'm Darren Helwedge. Tonight on the show, we're going to listen again to one of the interviews that really was responsible for there being an Arts on Monday from Thinking Out Loud. This interview originally ran some months back on Thinking Out Loud on a Tuesday night, which was the only night we had at that point. And the response that we got to this particular interview really made it clear that there was room for a show just about the arts every week. So tonight we're going to once again bring you that visit with Maestro Hugo Vianello of the Missouri Symphony Society. It was originally in recognition of an award that he was receiving at that point. It was a Lifetime Achievement Award from the Missouri Arts Council, but it turned into a lot more than that. We're going to talk about his life story, how he became interested in being a conductor, how he won his wife's heart over in spite of telling her that she couldn't sing, and how he came to be such an important part of our cultural life here in Columbia, founding and conducting for so many years the Missouri Chamber Orchestra, and of course the leadership in saving the Missouri Theater and all the work that's been done there. He's done so much for the community, and it's really a fun interview too. Sit down and enjoy my visit with Hugo Vianello, Thinking Out Loud, Arts on Monday. Hugo and I talked about how he got an early start to his lifelong love of music?
Well, Dad, when he found out he had a son, Dad, who was a violinist and really quite a good one, he came to the little crib and put a piece of music on the crib, hoping that someday I would wind up being a musician.
Your father was a musician.
He was. Unfortunately, he wasn't really able to make a very good living from that, so he had what he called an avocation, which, of course, put food on the table. And, and he was a machinist also, and tool and die maker.
Okay.
But he had a little orchestra that used to play and in the New York area. And as a matter of fact, he coached me for the first job that I had playing the violin for a wedding. And didn't get paid very much. I remember that the first job that I had was, which really wasn't too bad, $5 I received for playing for a couple of hours.
And you grew up, I understand, in New York, and there's got to be some advantages of being in a city with that much culture, that much diversity, as opposed to some of the musicians in my family who grew up in very small towns and had, you know, the type of music that was around them and were very talented, but were only really exposed to a couple of different types of music. You must have had a lot of different things going on around you.
Well, of course, there were symphonies to listen to. There were operas to go to. Of course, the Met is there, but I didn't have money to go to the Met. But there used to be a company that actually gave concerts or gave operas in at the Brooklyn Academy of Music. And there it was really kind of neat because for a dollar, you could go and listen to the opera. Interestingly enough, later on when I became a professional musician, I used to be hired by the same company to play for these operas that I had used to go to listen to.
Everything I've heard you talk about, either from your father, from the music that you are talking about performing, has been classical opera. Was that always the primary interest, or were there other things that you were listening to, playing, involved with as you were growing up?
Well, of course, my dad, because he had this little orchestra, which played dance music and stuff, played a lot of 1920s, 1930s music.
Oh, wonderful, wonderful. And, I love that stuff.
I mean, you know, tunes, you know, really two-step kind of music.
Sure, sure.
But, and also played classical stuff. The band, the little band that he had was called La Boheme, the La Boheme Orchestra. So there was that correlation. But, of course, when I grew up, it was during, and I became interested in girls, it was when I, in the 1930s or so, where I had a great time going to dances and listening to bands. And this was a big band era where we had Glenn Miller, Tommy Dorsey, Jimmy Dorsey, of course, Artie Shaw, and I took a particular interest in him because he married Lana Turner, who was too old for me, but she really was very, very attractive.
That would impress upon you some of the fringe benefits of being an outstanding musician and getting involved with that, certainly. Hugo Vianello is our guest. He's going to be receiving a Lifetime Achievement Award from the Missouri Arts Council. Talking a little bit about growing up in New York. Now, obviously, at some point, going beyond merely performing into conducting became your focus. What made you think that standing up in the front instead of sitting down and just playing the instrument was what you were wanting to do?
The time that I really knew was when I was going to the Manhattan School of Music, and I had to, in the conducting class, get up and conduct the Mozart Symphony 41. And I got up there and conducted the first movement, and and as I think back on it, I probably didn't know very much what I was doing. But at any rate, I came off and I was kind of in a euphoric state. And I went to my best friend there at the time, who was a violinist. And I said, Mel, I said, this is for me. I mean, I knew then that's something that I would want to do. You know, I set my sights on doing that. And way I managed to get the job was somebody asked me, how do you expect to get a job as a conductor? The two things that you need are influence and or money.
Mm-hmm.
And
we've already established you didn't have a lot of the latter.
I didn't have a lot of money, didn't have much influence at all. But I said, well, what I'm going to do is practice my viola, get to be a really fine violist, and someday somebody is going to want me to be their principal violist, and I will go there, and I will go there only if they let me conduct the orchestra. When do you expect this will happen? I said, well, as soon as I can have it happen. Well, anyway, we were talking before this interview that you came from Oklahoma City.
Right.
Well, before you were born, of course, I was in Oklahoma City, and I was invited to go down there as a principal violist, but the deal was that I would be allowed to conduct two concerts, and so that was in the contract, and that's what happened. I conducted the two concerts, which incidentally were broadcast over the Voice of America to Europe.
Hugo Vianello is our guest, and he'll be receiving a Lifetime Achievement Award from the Missouri Arts Council this week. One of the things we've been talking a lot about family anyway, and getting the personal story in all of this. You get to Columbia at one point. Lucy is alongside at that point, partly because of her significance to all of the starting of the Missouri Chamber Orchestra, and partly because I just like her an awful lot. I want to hear how you met Lucy and how she got involved in the musical career, because she's been a big part of everything that's been accomplished here, I know.
As far as Lucy is concerned, I remember I went out on a date, not with her, but with her girlfriend. And it was actually a double date. And as we were out and we were traveling to the place, I kept looking at Lucy and I kept on saying, gee, I wish I were going with her rather than the girl that I was with. But she was pretty much sort of locked in with this boyfriend that she had been going for a while. And I knew that there really wasn't much of a chance that I would be able to date her. But as things turned out, she wound up breaking off with that boyfriend. And I found out about this, and I called her up and asked her for a date. What happened was that I called her. We went out on a date, and she likes to tell a story about when I first picked her up at her house. In those days, you picked up the girl at the house.
Sure.
And, so the brother could look you over and and see whether you were worthy. I think he's still trying to figure out whether I am. But when I got into the house, I noticed that there was a piano on the side. And I said, oh, and I was a music student at that time. And I said, oh, do you play piano? And she said, yes, not very well, but I played. I said, gee, let me hear. And at that time, the song South Pacific was really very popular. And so she sat down and bum, poppy, poppy, pa, started playing it with a lot of fioriture, with flowery arpeggios and everything else.
Sure.
And when she finished, she looked around and I said, do you approve? And I said, you're right. You don't play very well. Well, she says to this day she never has played piano again.
Oh, no.
And that's right. We have a piano. I've never really heard her play it anymore. But she says that I killed her career. otherwise, she would have been a great pianist. But it was okay. And I'm surprised she went out the next day and with me. I dated her the next day. And we went out to Rockaway Beach.
Mm-hmm.
Not swimming, but sketching. She liked to sketch, and I liked to sketch.
Huh.
And so I have a picture of her, and I still remember, a lavender dress, and that I she's sitting on a log, and this is a picture that I still have of our second date. So that's how we met. And now we've been together for almost 55 years, so
it's,
something worked all right.
I guess so. Let's go ahead and get you to Columbia. Now, you mentioned that you'd been in Kansas City, and I know that you came into Columbia late 60s, right?
68.
Yeah. Okay. And coming in, interestingly enough, to work at Stevens College, how did they approach you? Were you in Kansas City right up to that point?
No, I was up in Evanston. I was Northwestern.
Oh, in Illinois, okay.
I was conducting the orchestra up in Northwestern and also conducting in Kansas City a summer festival that I had started. When the opportunity came, Stevens College, in those days it was really a state-of-the-art school. Really, I was amazed when I came down for an interview at how terrific the studios were. They were doing television. Every faculty member had a tape recorder. Anyway, I came down here and haven't regretted it yet.
Good.
I mean, I'm not with Stevens anymore. I left there to become the associate conductor in Kansas City, but I was there for about 13 years and thoroughly enjoyed it all the time that I was there. And I'm glad to see that it's coming back.
I am too. I think for people who have not been in Columbia as long, even as I have, I've been here not quite 20 years and can remember a time when I first got here when Stevens College was really kind of a big deal, and it kind of faded a bit, and it really does seem to be picking up a lot. There's a lot going on there. Founded the Missouri Symphony Society. Why did you feel the need to do that?
Actually, we started that as a youth orchestra.
Oh, okay.
You see, when I first got here, I was a recipient of the largesse of a very nice woman. Her name was White, who taught most of the kids the string instruments when I first came here.
Okay.
And by largesse, I mean that these kids were really good. She obviously must have been a very fine teacher. And the students that were there, I recruited in order to play and form an orchestra at Stevens College.
Okay.
Now, at that time, there wasn't much of an orchestra over at the university. And so the orchestra in town was Stevens College Orchestra. And the faculty members from the university also played with the Stevens Orchestra. Well, we had, a 70-piece orchestra there that performed, rehearsed twice a week. Some of these kids wanted to perform during the summertime. And so we decided that we would start this orchestra. Everything went hunky-dory, but unfortunately we didn't have any of the teachers teaching the kids anymore. And so little by little, the pool of good players sort of wasted away. And the ones that were there graduated and either went to college to Indiana or whatever it might be, or, to UMKC rather than to UMC at that time. And so they left town, or they had to work during the summertime to earn money for their tuition.
Mm-hmm.
So eventually the orchestra, we started hiring some people and we wound up actually turning professional, which was probably a very, very good thing. Incidentally, the orchestra now has reverted and we do have a youth symphony again.
The initial intent to have the Missouri Symphony be the youth orchestra, you become a professional symphony at some point, and now there's back to being a youth orchestra affiliated with the
professional group.
Terrific.
And of course, we had started a chorus, and now we are doing the chorus again. I've always, quite honestly, subsidized pretty much the orchestra by always having another job. And during the later years, in the 90s, I was called to become the associate conductor of the Kansas City Symphony. And as a result of that, I used to drive back and forth. I like to say that I had to log for income tax purposes that I put 190,000 miles in 13 years on Highway 70.
That's just brutal when you think about the condition of 70 during some of that time.
Well, it was grueling. And
were you always at the Missouri Theater?
Oh, no.
Okay.
No. As a matter of fact, the very first series of concerts with a professional group was in the commons of Stevens College.
Okay.
And we used to give the concerts there. And the orchestra was much smaller at that time. And my idea was to build it up until it was a full symphony, which now it is.
Mm-hmm.
We also played, at that time the orchestra was small enough, we used to give two performances a week at the recital hall. And then when we had the festival orchestra, which we continued, we used to play here in Jesse. There was one time when the university could not let us have the halls. I don't know, they were renovating or some, for some reason. And so I went around, looking around at the different venues in town to see where we could possibly put our summer series
right.
for that year. It was 1987 or 88.
Okay.
I walked into the Missouri Theater, and I was wondering whether there was a stage behind the screen. And fellow David Love, I guess it is,
okay.
Said, yes, there is. And
it's still set up like the movie theater with the screen in front of where the stage is. Okay.
And I saw that it would be ample, more than ample for our purposes. And so I said, well, can we rent it? And he said, well, why don't you buy it? I said, well, now, wait a minute. I thought that the place was not for sale, that it was in a trust, et cetera, and all of that complications.
Sure.
And he said, well, it just came out of the trust and it's up for sale yesterday, as a matter of fact. Oh. So I...
Remarkable timing that kept it from becoming a mini mall or whatever.
So what are they going to do? Well, they'll probably tear it down. And, you know. So I said, well, let me write you a check. At that time, I was the manager and the chief factotum of everything. And so I said, let me write you a check and I'll give you $1,000. Deposit to keep it in.
Not go sell it to somebody that's going to tear it down and make a parking lot here.
And so I gave him a check, and then I went to the board and asked if they would like to buy the theater because we needed some place to play.
Sure.
And I said, well, Hugo, you know, you're a sweet fellow, but how are we going to finance this? I said, well, and of course I laid down the groundwork before that with a very wonderful guy, David Harrison.
Mm-hmm.
And we presented it to the board that the fellow that owned it would give us a loan on the mortgage half the mortgage. I told the board that we could do this and we could get half of the money via the fellow who owned it.
Okay.
And this was going to be at 10%. And says, well, gosh, that's pretty good. That's when, you know, at that time, the rates were up to about 18%
sure.
interest. And, but what about the rest of it? Well, I had worked out a deal with the Department of Natural Resources, and they were going to loan us some money. And actually, they told us that we could have the money, the half of the money, for no interest. And I told the board that the original mortgage was at 10%, and the Department of Natural Resources would give us the rest of the money at 5%. And, gee, that's wonderful. And so they voted it in. And I kept the idea that there would be no interest. I kept that in case they turned down the 5%. Then I would say, well, what about no interest?
There you go. Okay, I wondered what was up with that.
So anyway, so then I had to confess that I was leading them on and that it was no interest. Anyway.
Got approved.
We got approved and put it in. Of course, there were the naysayers who kept shaking their heads and saying, how could we get along with... But. And what is interesting, too, is one of the newspapers came out and said that we were Don Quixote waving at windmills because the organization was too small to be able to do it.
Describe what you got when it first started. How bad was it?
Well, of course, we learned about the problem with it in stages.
Yeah.
Because, you know, you're never quite sure how sound your thoroughbred is going to be. But One of the big problems, of course, whenever we had a rainstorm, it would leak. The water would leak into the dressing rooms.
Right.
There was no water backstage. They had cut the pipes.
Oh.
And so the dressing rooms did not have any water, and the toilets, of course, didn't flush. And we finally were able to hook that up, got some plumber to come in and hook it up. But the doggone toilets were so noisy that, quite honestly, the little secret told behind the scenes is that when I got ready to go out for a concert, I would go into the toilet and I would wait until a concert mistress came out and the applause would start, and then I would and then I would flush it.
While the sound was hidden by the applause. Okay.
So we had a problem also with the air conditioning units, which were right on the orchestra left.
Oh, heavens.
And it was really noisy. And I was wondering why everybody, even during the piano concertos, would move over to orchestra right, because they wanted to get away from the noise of the,
of the air conditioners.
And that was fair.
Hugo Vianello, our guest, conductor laureate of the Missouri Symphony Society. It's easy to look at that accomplishment and all of the great gift to Columbia that that's going to be for so long of just the building. Talk about the musical accomplishments, though.
I feel that each year the programs got better and better. The orchestra got bigger and better. As you know, we recruit people from literally all over the United States, and also
sure.
from foreign countries, from Mexico, from Argentina, from Japan. And the artists have gotten better and better. And with our notorieties, if I may say, use the word, we've had some really great artists over here. And one of the highlights was when Andre Watts Andre Watts came here and played two concerti on the same program for us as a benefit. And, you know, we sold out the hall.
Mm-hmm.
And as a benefit, and when I say benefit, I mean, Andre was such a sweet guy, and still is, of course. But he did not accept the fee, did not accept plane fare from New York.
Oh, for heaven's sake!
And when we tried to pay his hotel bill down at the executive house, he said no. He said, I said I would do a benefit, and this is it. So he came here without any pay at all. Very few people would do that.
I imagine so. We think of Columbia as being so unique and point at the orchestra as one of several institutions in our city that are very special. How unusual, now that you look back on it, is it for an orchestra of this magnitude and the other arts institutions that we have going to be supported in a city of, for a lot of that time, 50, 60,000 people?
It's very, very unusual. And of course, the people here, and a great many of them realize the advantage of having an orchestra like this. I mean, economically, artistically, whatever. But I don't know of any other place that has this kind of an orchestra, and I'm talking about a contract orchestra in such a small, relatively small place, and of the quality that it has. And of course, I can say this very easily now, particularly since Kirk Trevor is here, and I have the utmost respect for him and feel that the orchestra is in good hands. I go to every concert that they do, of the series, and it is a terrific orchestra. It was a terrific orchestra when I was there, and it's still a terrific orchestra.
You're not there full-time as the conductor now. What are you doing?
I'm writing.
Oh, great.
What I'm hoping is one of these days to get the latest thing that I've written. It's an opera.
Okay.
And I'm hoping to get it produced. And so now it's really kind of funny that you write something, it's a brainchild, and you put it down on paper, and then you spend most of your time not in the creative thing, but, you know, figuring out how you're going to get the money to be able to produce it.
Mm-hmm.
So that's one of my next projects. And I'm also writing my memoirs. And,
oh, wonderful.
Well, as you...
I'm very pleased to hear that.
I think I write better than I speak.
And that's how it all sounded as I visited with Maestro Hugo Vianello on the original Tuesday Night Thinking Out Loud some months back. Of course, reaction to that show and a few others that had an arts theme to them have led to this show, Thinking Out Loud Arts on Monday, here every week, and I look forward to lots more Monday nights bringing you Arts on Monday. In the meantime, tune in tomorrow night for Thinking Out Loud, and then Friday for Thinking Out Loud Fridays at Mizzou. Till then, I'm Darren Helwedge. Have a great evening. Well, that was a Thinking Out Loud that originally aired back in 2006, an interview that I was honored to do with Hugo Vianello at his home here in Columbia, and enjoyed so very much getting the chance to talk with him. And like I said at the very beginning, was able to dig through our archives a little bit and find that. And we're going to be putting these up on the website and on our podcast regularly now. I've got... I think if you count the arts show, the Mizzou show, the regular Thinking Out Loud, almost 15 years worth of that, and the sports show that we used to do on Saturday morning, we've got about 1,000 shows are in that ballpark, and we're not going to put all of them up because some of them are very dated and not that interesting, but some of them are, like this one, very interesting. Hugo Vianello, who was, of course, the longtime conductor of the Missouri Symphony, which he founded, passed away on March 30th of 2018. But the legacy that he has left behind continues, and that symphony welcomes its third ever music director, Wilbur Lynn, and we'll have him on this week's Thinking Out Loud program as well. That is Thinking Back. Look at some of the archives of Thinking Out Loud. Remember, you can always follow us on all your favorite sources of podcasts. Just go to kbia.org, click on programs for Thinking Out Loud. I'm Darren Helwedge. Take care of yourself.